Welcome to E-commerce Matters. E-commerce Matters is the UK's leading e-commerce pricing podcast brought to you by Black Curve. Each episode explores how retailers can better understand competitor pricing and use pricing insights to improve online visibility and checkout conversion. It's the dawn of a new season, season 4, and this is episode 51 entitled Product Matching Explained. I'm Philip Huthwaite, founder and CEO at Black Curve. I'm joined as ever by Dr. Rob Horton, Chief Product Officer at Black Curve. Let's get pricing. Well, welcome, Rob. Ready to get back to your data science days with today's podcast topic around product matching?
Yeah, I think today we need a big red button that we press every time we get anywhere too secret saucy, don't we? Just kind of plays bird song or something over the top.
Me or something, you know.
Like, yeah. Sorry, headphones users.
So today we often get asked, you know, how do you automatically go out and find product matches so quickly? And we thought, therefore, we get asked it so often that we'd record a podcast on the very topic. So we're going to tell you how we at Black Curve go away and find product matches. We're going to explain what product matching is to start with, and we're going to tell you how we at Black Curve go out and find matches, exact matches for your particular product. We won't give the crown jewels away, and as Rob mentioned, there'll be comedy noises if we do, and we'll pull out those to avoid giving away too much.
If we really mess up, you'd never even know because we'll get edited out.
That's true. In intellectual property will not be shared too much, but really it's a bit of a tease to demystify the process, and we'll go into why getting it right is so important. And we'll touch on the different product matching methods that that you can use, and we'll go over the methods that Black Curve use as well. And we'll end on a bit of a forward thinking piece around, you know, what does the future hold in regards to product matching. So with that, let's start at the very beginning and set the scene.
What actually is product matching? What are we talking about? And really what product matching is saying, okay, so I've got all these products in my inventory and lots of people online are selling the same product, but how can I confirm that that product is the same one as the one I'm selling? I mean, that's all it is. It's no, the uses are myriad, I guess, or more complex, but the fundamentals of it are just like, is this product the same as that one?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of use cases, there'll be lots of reasons why you want to do product matching, and in our context, we're effectively saying, I have a list of products in my inventory, and I want to find out what other competitors are selling those products, and I want to therefore go away and scrape a website and get back information to say, well, competitor A, competitor B, competitor C also sells those products. So you've got your own product and you've matched it to, you found exactly the same product on your competitor's website. And then what you do with that information is up to you, because on the competitor website, there's a whole host of information once you found the match that you might wish to extract. At Black Curve, our primary data point that we're interested in is the price, right? So what price are they selling that product at any given point during the day? Because then that can inform our customers' own pricing decision if they're adopting a competitor-led strategy. But there might be other information on that page. It might be things like in stock, out of stock. That data point could be really useful for purchasing team as well as prices. It might show number of reviews of that particular product. And so therefore you know your marketing team might see that as, right, guys, we need to get more reviews on our product because I think that's driving conversion on my competitor's website versus my website. And there's a whole myriad of other use cases for it. But effectively, it is going out and finding the equivalent product on a competitor's website. And when I say equivalent, more often than not, when we talk about product matching, we're talking about exact matches. So we're saying, product 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, product ID, Dyson Hoover Animal XZY is sold at competitor A.
We're talking like barcode level match, right? Like, as in, or GTIN or whatever is the way we think about it in our world. It's that it's like, this is exactly the same product identified with its unique serial number or whatever form that is, and that we're trying to find the other products with that same number effectively.
And we won't go into it in too much detail later when we talk about next best alternative or like for like, because primarily, especially retailers that are selling branded goods, you are only really interested in that exact match. But you can also look at product matching from a point of view of go out and find what's the next best alternative, what's the next best equivalent product that a competitor's selling. This is mostly done when you've got your own branded goods, okay, and you therefore, nobody else is selling that product, but your competitor might have an equivalent product.
Like a really good example of this kind of stuff is generics. So we're quite pro CrossFit at Black Curve. We use a lot of protein powder.
Are we Rob?
Well, two out of the leadership team are anyway. Keep trying to convert Philip, but to join the cult. But protein powder is a really good example of that, right? In terms of it's usually own branded, but it's a generic in that if I'm buying a protein powder from supplier A, supplier B, or supplier C, as a consumer, it's largely the same product, but the barcode won't be the same, right? So your like for like alternative would just be, okay, well, these protein powders sold by similar suppliers to me, for example.
Yeah, and more often than not, those, yeah, there will typically be a brand that is available in lots of places. I'm trying to hark back to my rowing days. Is it Muscle Max or something like that?
I use Bulk, so if they want to give me any codes, that'd be great.
but there are a few.
Rob does too. The other Rob does too. Well, so actually,
It's got to happen. But
it's my bulk.
but there's typically like brands that are sold by multiple retailers, and they would be the ones that the own brands might look to benchmark their own product against, just as much as might wish to benchmark their product against against an alternative own brand. Without to go sort of too much into the weeds at this stage, when it comes to actually doing the product matching, you can do product matching automatically where it's branded and available in lots of locations. You're going to struggle to do that automatically, and we will go into this in a bit more detail. You're going to have more of a human intervention to do the product matching when it is sort of next best alternative, because you need that market awareness, right? I mean, next time you see me, I am the Michelin man. Everyone thinks of me as this strapping, muscular person. I said nobody ever. I wouldn't have a clue of who the best brands are from a protein powder perspective, to continue your example. So I would just be making kind of sweeping guesses or from a Google search, whereas, you know, the Robs here on the leadership team will go, no, that's not the same as that, because, you know, it comes in different sizes, or the gains aren't as good, or I don't know.
For me, it's about intolerances, mate.
There you go. But I mean, that is a criteria of the product, which will mean that you won't match it against a product that has weigh in, for example. So so to pull us up then, I think, because we've rapidly in trouble of going too much into the detail. And so effectively, just to confirm, product matching is finding an equivalent product being sold on a competitor's website, really, and then using that information to make decisions off the back of it. So let's go into how does product matching work in e-commerce? What data set do you need to start with? Where does a retailer start?
Yeah, so it's pretty simple if you're in e-commerce, because you probably have all the data to hand anyway, but you effectively just start with the list of products, your inventory, and then you basically employ, if you want to do it at scale or you can do it by hand, you employ someone like Black Curve to go off and find effectively all the products that we or you think are comparable. And then you take your inventory and you take that list of products and you try and match them. And you can either do that automatically with algorithms or you can do that by hand. And I think we'll get into kind of the pros and cons of that, of each of those later, really. But I mean, that's the long and short of it. Get your products, find the things you want to compare it to, and then match them. And in e-commerce, it's really easy because of the way the stores are set up. You probably have that product data in a data warehouse. We will just take that feed straight out of your store or out of Merchant Center. We'll run off, we'll gather all the things that we think are similar. We do that by searching Google. And then we will run our automatic matching algorithm over the top of it, and that will basically classify them as a match or not a match.
So I guess just to take that the next level down, when we talk about product inventory, there are specific data points that we need, aren't there? There's, you know, at a basic yep. level, we need to know their product name. So we need to yep. know that it's a Dyson Animal V56C. Okay, I think that is a product. I don't know if I've pulled that out of thin air, but
got you on the Hoover train, mate. I don't know where that's happened.
I know. Although I have just bought a Shark Hoover. That's cheating.
They're good, they.
Our cleaner suggested it. But anyway, let's not go off piece too much. You need to know the product name, and then the other piece of information that you need to know is the brand. So in that particular example, it would be a Dyson or it would be a Shark. And then you typically would need the GTIN or the EAN code, unique identifier that the manufacturer would typically assign to a product when it's being registered.
But it is worth saying that the more supplementary data you can provide, the more likely you are to find and confirm a good match. And that could be everything from prices to anything really, like description of the product or all the rest of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And because the bit that we do before we get to using all the data sets is we take your product information, or certainly at Black Curve we do, and even if you're doing it from a manual perspective, you need to open up a Google web browser or whatever search engine that you use, and you need to put that product information into the web browser and see what results you get back. Or alternatively, you need to go to your competitor website directly and put that product information in and see what you get back. And from a Google perspective, if you can try this yourself, like you can put in a product name on itself, see what results you get back. You can put in a product name plus black brand, see what results you get back. You can put in a GTIN only, see what results you get back. You can put in combination of those data points. And what's really interesting is a lot of the time, certainly from a Google search perspective, Google shopping search, you do often get different results, because Google's trying to be clever, right? It's trying to say it's using your historical search history, or it's be using what people have searched for historically or click through based on those search terms, and is trying to present you the most relevant information. So at Black Curve, what Rob mentioned earlier, the more information you can get, the better, is because we effectively throw all that information at Google at scale. So if you've got 1,000 products, we're sort of every millisecond, every second, throwing multiple different combinations of those search terms into Google. And at this point, we're agnostic. We don't care what Google gives us back. We're saying, Google, give us everything you possibly have for this. So the more information you give us in your product inventory, the more detail it is. Number one, interestingly, sometimes the less results you get, because if you have the more information, you get more accurate, less results. So that's something to bear in mind. And also, the more information that you have in your product inventory, the more information that the algorithms have to say, yes, okay, Google's given us these results. I've got all this information against your product. I can then, with a high degree of certainty, say that product A from competitor website one is the same as product A from competitor website two. Okay.
I'm just going to stick my normal health warning that I put in here whenever we talk about this stuff. So if you're listening to this and thinking, well, that sounds straightforward, I think I'll build this myself, don't. It's the underlying process is incredibly straightforward, but scaling it is incredibly hard. Doing it, so the difference between doing it once for one product and doing it for literal thousands of products or millions of products multiple times a day is very, very different. And just from our perspective, we cost at minimum for 1,000 products £130 a month, and there is no way you're building that and supporting that infrastructure for that price. So if you are interested and you are thinking about doing that, I say come talk to us rather than try doing it yourself.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of retailers that are doing it themselves manually have even come unstuck because Google decides to block you, right? It suddenly thinks that you're doing something, you know, it sometimes asks you, are you a robot? And you have to fill in that wonderful picture of click the motorbikes, which I still get wrong. I don't know, or the bridges. I know, clearly I am.
The ones with letters that line through it.
Hang on, what? That's not a bridge. What? Goodness me. Try again.
Is that a bridge?
Yeah. But no, you know, you get blocked and then you don't get any results. So do look to get a reputable supplier in Black Curve preferably to do your product matching. But yeah, we get all the information, and we're going to now talk about product matching specifically. We get all the information back from Google, or if you're going directly to a website, you get all the information back from the particular website. And then basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to crunch it through our algorithms to basically confirm that product matches that product. And really, really simply, there's you know, as a high level, I'm not giving any sort of secret sauce away here. If you have product name, okay, is really detailed, and it is Animal Dyson Hoover V76ZY12345, and that is the result you get back from Google, and the product name is exactly the same, okay, you can 99%, probably 100% certainty say that is a correct match and pass it through. Where it gets trickier is when a lot of the time Google, when it's giving the return results, and also, you know, on competitor websites, they try and sort of summarize things. So they might just say Dyson vac, because they wouldn't say Hoover, would they? Because that's a competitor brand. But also they might say Dyson Hoover. And sorry, I've just said it again. Dyson vacuum. It's so ingrained, isn't it?
They definitely wouldn't say Dyson Hoover.
No, exactly. Shark, yes,
Henry. Yeah. Other
or other vacuum cleaners are available. And then they just give you sometimes this generic result. So you have no idea whether or not that's the same product. And this is where the secondary data sets come in. So you know, things like, is it giving me barcode information? Is there the right brand there? What does the description tell me? And this is where, you know, we start to touch upon how Black Curve does its product matching.
I mean, just to illustrate the importance of kind of and how hard product matching is, it's fine if it's something like, I keep wanting to say a Dyson Hoover now, but like a specific version of a Dyson product. But what if it's a biro, right? And they come in multiple colors and you can buy them individually or in packs of 10, 20 or 50. This is where it starts getting more and more challenging, really. So because of that, just simply thinking, oh, does product name A equal product name B? Well, it'll get you a chunk of the way there. It will never be, it'll probably only be like 60-70% accurate, right? And then the real magic and kind of secret sauce of it then kind of gets that up to 90-95.
And this is why getting product matching correct, and it's worth talking about the importance of product matching now for competitive pricing strategies is so important, and why using a provider such as Black Curve is imperative. I mean, we've recently, in the last few months, for example, taken on a stationary supplier, right? And I'm just going to continue with your biro example because it's very relevant. And they've, you know, all the competitors are selling these products. Some of them are selling them in packs of 20, some of them are selling them in packs of 30, you know, but they're all the same biro, right? They're just being sold in different pack sizes, or often what biro does is they create sort of custom packs to be only sold by certain suppliers, you know, even though it, you know, from an end consumer perspective, it might be considered, hey, it's a biro, it's not different. It actually is different because it's got different packaging, and so forth. And there's many different variations of this. And if you're making pricing decisions at scale, you know, even if you're making those decisions manually, let alone automatically, you know, you making a pricing decision thinking that, say you've got a box of 30 biros, okay, you want to make sure that if you're doing a competitor-led strategy and you're using the pricing information that's been collected from your competitors, you want to darn sure make sure that that competitor price being surfaced to you is for 30. Because if it's being surfaced for you for 20, you could go, oh, Jesus, look, oh, goodness me, all of my competitors are selling this for a lot cheaper. Okay, I need to lower my price. Whereas actually you've made a decision on bad data, and therefore you're, in that instance, you might be selling your product too cheaply. And on the flip side, I don't know, if you match it to 40 biros or 50 biros or 100 biros, I don't know, I've never bought that many biros in my life, but you know, you're instantly making
a free office.
Yeah, well, there you go, you're instantly making you might make your price too expensive, and therefore you don't sell as many as that. So it, you know, crap in, crap out, I don't know if that's the best way.
There's a real key health warning here which I think people miss, is that it doesn't really matter how good your matching algorithm is and whether it's automatic or by hand, it will go wrong at certain points. Like the hand one, right? If you've outsourced it or done it in-house, people get tired, right? We've both, at various points in our lives, kind of ground through thousands of products to sanity check or clean data. And you do make mistakes, right? And so if you're using that in a pricing strategy downstream, you've got to make sure that there are kind of checks and balances in that pricing strategy. I think, our matching algorithm is very, very good, but I couldn't hand on heart tell you that it will get every match 100% correct, right? I don't think that's possible. And I don't think it matters whether you use ML or humans or something in the middle. And I think that's really just like an important point to hammer home, really.
Yeah, I mean, and then that's, yeah, because sometimes you're reliant on what the competitors are surfacing up, because we've had instances where we have been some bad matches, and it's actually because competitors have surfaced up the incorrect cheating, and that's been categorized on their own website, and then also Google's categorized it incorrectly, and all of a sudden, you know, okay, fundamentally the match is quote unquote correct in terms of all the data that you've been given, but actually the product.
So that's a really, really good point. The match can be correct, but the data can be incorrect as well. So that's why it really is worth employing professionals.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I'll mention the there's the actual going away, collecting the data at scale and doing the matching based on the information that you're available, that you have available to you. So using, for example, GTIN brand product code information, to make sure you have the right match. Once you've done all that, we generally at Black Curve recommend that you add use Black Curve to add another dimension, another layer to support your product matching, to make sure that you're making decisions off the right data. And that's, for example, excluding outliers. So excluding competitor pricing. If you're making a pricing decision and you've got, I don't know, 20 competitors that are selling that product, if one price is massively out of whack compared to all the other competitors, that's an indication that, or something might be up there. Do I A, investigate that manually, or B, do I just ignore that data point entirely to make my decision? Because hang on, is it the match is wrong? Is it the competitors tagged their product wrong? And so forth. So there's various tips and tricks that you can use, you know, for example, you know, just simply a percentage difference from my current price, you know, plus or minus 20%, 30%, 40%, whatever it may be, that you use as this sort of secondary layer to ensure that you're making, in our case, a pricing decision off the most accurate data that you possibly can. So in terms of the product matching itself, you know, we started mentioning some of the pros and cons of doing it from a hand management perspective. So what we mean by hand product matching is an e-commerce manager, e-commerce director, whatever it might be, the role in your business has simply copied and pasted a GTIN, a product name, into Google, typed out the price or copied and pasted the price in the spreadsheet, hand visualized, okay, I can see that the picture's the same, and has confirmed that match and copied it in the spreadsheet and is doing that, you know, I don't know, 10 times, 20 times, 30 times, or however many products you can sit through on a Friday afternoon or Monday morning. That we mentioned, okay, fine. You know, that could give a high degree of accuracy on the one hand, because you're likely to know your products. You've got, you're intelligent. You've got that visual memory. You're working with your products day in, day out. But it just takes one control C, control V error. It just takes one, you know, person to come in and ask you, do you want a cup of coffee? Do you want a tea? And you've suddenly taken your eye off the ball, and just simply, you know, you get tired. And some of these products, especially where there's lots of different variants of a very similar product, you know, you can miss a V, an I, a number on the code, which instantly means that you're matching something very different.
Yeah, I mean, if you think your pipeline for that is usually an Excel spreadsheet you've got from somewhere, and then somewhere you'll have a column in. So you'll have the data in that, you'll have a column, yes, no, and then you'll be uploading it somewhere or editing it somewhere. And then for each row, you're going through and going, is this the same as this? Yes, no. If it is, great. Put it in the platform or add it to my spreadsheet. There's actually quite a lot that can go wrong in there, like you say, without even thinking about it, around that manual process. And also it's just slow and melts your brain. And I've done a lot of this, especially when I was building the matching algorithm out to construct the training sets and all the rest of it. And you just get less accurate over time. And I think it's amazing how quickly that drops off. This just might be my terrible attention span, but like I reckon the first 10 to 20 I'm good, and the next 20 to 40 I'm okay, and then after that I have to go and do something else and come back to it, because just grinding through that is really, like, humans are not good at those kind of repetitive tasks. Basically, that's why we develop computers in the first place, is what computers are excellent for.
Not only that, you get RSI in your hand when you
in
do
your eyeballs, eye strain and like
I mean, you know, hand matching, you know, if you've only got a few key selling lines, you know, and you're doing very, you know, you're doing ad hoc pricing, it's a good place to start, right? The next method that you can use to do product matching is rules based. What do we mean by that, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the sake of it, I'll start with rules and then talk about ML as well, because really, most people end up with a blend of the two. So rules-based is basically like 1980s AI, which is heuristics. So if this happens, do that. If this condition is met, do something else. So it's like the example we were talking about. If product name A equals product name B, tick true. And then if enough conditions go true, you say, I've got a match, right? Conversely, for the ML side, you train, for example, a neural net, and then you, with a load of matches that you know and a load of matches you know aren't, and then you basically say, is this a match? And the neural net says yay or nay, or gives you a confidence. Really, neither of those works super well in isolation, so you kind of end up in the middle, because you can't actually, for two real reasons. The ML side, with neural nets, it's really hard to understand what's going on. And really, most of the time, what you want to find out is like, okay, if I made a mistake, why have I made this mistake? And heuristics and rules are completely interrogatable, so because you know the path it's taken through. But often it's really, really hard to catch all the edge cases without writing 10,000 rules. So really, what both of these blend into is some kind of algorithmic matching strategy where you have a combination of heuristics and kind of clever ML bits and pieces, and you pull the data and get the answer out.
Yeah, why would you use one over the other? I mean, is there particularly advantages and disadvantages of, you know, where does ML come unstuck, I guess?
ML comes unstuck in the it kind of, when it goes wrong, it goes real wrong. I mean, everyone's been playing with ChatGPT recently, which is different but analogous. So you ask it a question, and most of the time it's right, and then every now and then it kind of kicks out absolute nonsense, right? You ask what color the sky is, and 600 times it says blue, and then on the 601st time it says, I don't know, luminous yellow, because there was some weird edge case in the training set. And the problem with it is that you can't interrogate why that's happened. It's just something in the training data that it's used has led to that edge case. So what people tend to do is then wrap these ML models with heuristics that kind of guide the data through and make sure the answers are relatively sensible and kind of course correct. I also think, and I was thinking about this as we've been going through this, haven't really talked about it in the notes, but it's also really down to like what your use case is. So we Black Curve have a very, very specific use case in terms of, for e-commerce merchants, we are taking their products in and we're finding them on Google Shopping primarily. And that really narrows the problem space down. Whereas other people are saying, well, we're going to take any instance of a product, and that could be on your competitor's website, that could have completely different formats from like A to B to C to D, or on different marketplaces or whatever, or from store images. And then you would need something more like a neural network that can classify a different types of information rather than coming from kind of one specific case. So it's really, really comes down to the pros and cons of them, really come down to like what you're trying to do and where the data that you're trying to match is coming from.
So we've got the data, we've done the product matching, I've got the information. I'm going to ask this question specifically from a pricing perspective. You're doing product matching from a pricing perspective. What are the benefits once you've got accurate product matching for e-commerce retailers?
Well, to be brutally honest, the primary one is that if you're selling branded goods, you're likely in a competitor-driven market. And at the minute, you're definitely in a price-driven market because of the economic climate. And so, as you said earlier, you need accurate product matching to get accurate pricing data so that you can make accurate pricing decisions. And it's really that simple. If I'm brutally honest, it's like, how do you make the correct decision about where to price your product if you can't guarantee that the data you're basing it off is for the right ones.
And then once you've got your competitor pricing information, you can, you know, at a start of a 10, you can work out, right, where am I too cheap versus the competition? Where am I overly expensive versus the competition? And you can tighten up your position to the market. So you're clearly, yeah, you're giving away too much margin, so you increase the price where you're too cheap. And conversely, it's unlikely that you're converting on your higher priced items. So you reduce the price of those. And hopefully the intention is that then you start to see more conversion, you start to see more sales, and you win more market share, especially if you are more nimble. You're doing this product matching on more of a repeatable basis. You're using a tool like Black Curve rather than doing it in an ad hoc manner. Because you know, the more often that you change price, the tighter you are for the market. Certainly when you're selling branded goods, you know, typically, mm-hmm, you know, we see that your visibility on Google improves, and your visibility on Google improves, the more eyeballs see, the more people click through, the more people buy, right? Say it's as simple as that, but that is the, yep, that is the circle of life from a pricing perspective. So just to end, where do you see the future of product matching within e-commerce?
So I'm really positive about it in e-commerce, actually, because I think it's one of those things that not only that kind of serves everyone by everyone getting it right, if you believe in healthy markets, and also the marketplaces, I'm thinking particularly of Google Shopping, which I think still gets like 86% of advertising spend or search, I can't remember the stat quite offhand, but it's a huge proportion of market share that isn't going through Amazon, basically goes to Google Shopping. And it's really in Google's interest to have accurately matched products so they can compare like alternatives for their users who are coming through. So this means in our space that actually it's becoming an easier and easier problem to solve, really. Where it gets hard, I think, is if there's where people want to do things kind of outside those marketplaces. So if you want to know how do you match products to like specific competitor websites? But again, I think the rule of ML, that's a much easier problem than it would have been 10 years ago. I think it's weirdly, the problem is becoming simpler because the market forces in the industry we work in are driving us towards accurate product matching and are investing in it themselves.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, if you'd spoken to retailers 5 years ago, a lot of them were going directly to competitor websites and doing scraping directly through the competitor websites because that was, you know, the only way that they could guarantee that that they would get all the products that their competitors were selling and they'd get the latest information. Whereas, you know, Google's invested heavily in its own ecosystem, and also as e-commerce has got more and more mature, more and more competitive. I don't know if it's specifically the COVID effect, but more and more retailers are making use of Google Merchant Center and its ecosystem, and you've got to get your data right on that platform in order to make sure that your ads are fully optimized. Most of us go to search engines. It's our first port of call to find anything, even if we know which website we're going to. Often we put that website into Google search engine initially. And therefore, by that very nature, you know, that whole ecosystem is just getting better and better, and there's more information available and it's getting more reliable. And so if I'd asked a retailer 5 years ago if they would rely only on Google Shopping data for their pricing information, they might have gone, especially if they were fairly mature from a pricing perspective, have gone, no, not on my Nelly. I need to scrape it directly. Whereas now the major players you know, we have a number of them on our books as customers, are, you know, you can just rely on Google Shopping data, which is actually a lot cheaper to do the product matching, because you're only scraping from one source as opposed to having to have infrastructure to collect from multiple different locations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the COVID effect can't be understated, really, because I think it accelerated the move online. Lots of people who probably were still getting away with not operating online, especially smaller players, suddenly had to. So what was a bit more of a, I guess, easier market for those online suddenly became very, very competitive. And then obviously the easiest way really to get going is to just spin up Merchant Center and sell through Google and have them do all your advertising for you, right? Because I think actually that the you mentioned it earlier, but the key point is it's the fact that most of the world searches on Google, and Google controls advertising in its own platform, obviously, that really drives why you can go to that one source of truth now, because they've just kind of dominated the market.
The scary monopoly. I won't open that Pandora's box quite yet, but yeah, so just in terms of to summarize product matching explained, if I can summarize a 45-minute conversation about it very, very succinctly, effectively, we're taking your product feed, which has your product name, brand, GTIN, and a whole host of other information. And certainly from a Blackcurve perspective, we're putting that into Google at scale, multiple searches every millisecond to get all the information back of all the possible results for each and every search. And then what, you know, from a matching perspective, you have two options, okay? You can either match it manually by going through and saying, right, is that website the same as that website? Or more often than not, you're going to use a tool like Blackcurve, which uses a combination of rules-based matching and machine learning to get to a degree of confidence score of the product A coming out from competitor A1's website is the same as the product that you're selling on your own website. And it's doing this at scale. It's really important that you use a supplier such as Blackcurve that knows its stuff, because you want to be sure that you're making decisions off right and accurate data, because if you've not got accurate pricing decisions, you in turn will not make the right pricing decisions on your own website if you're getting crap data, and that could mean that you're selling yourself too cheap, or could mean that you're not going to sell that product at all, and you're going to lose market share. Especially if you've got thousands and thousands of products, you need to make sure that those thousands and thousands of matches are correct. In terms of the future of product matching and e-commerce, actually, you know, I feel that it's getting almost like a bit of a smaller world, and largely mm-hmm. driven by Google, because Google is putting so much effort into amalgamating the data, making it easier for us as end consumers to find information and aggregating it. That is almost like the first conduit for doing the product matching. And these guys have been around the block for a long time, got a lot of money, a lot of clever engineers, and so that product
they,
matching in the first.
They certainly have a lot of money.
That's true. And so we very much see product matching being driven by what Google's doing in its ecosystem, just to make it easier for all of us to know that when I search for product A, as I said, I'm getting product A from competitor 1, 2, 3, and 4, and I'm reliant, and that data is accurate every time I search for that particular product. So thank you very much. We've been Blackcurve. This has been E-commerce Matters, the UK's leading e-commerce pricing podcast. Until next time, happy pricing.